Tonight's shiur, Parshas Pinchas. Sometimes a person is offered a certain job and doesn't work out, really would like this certain position, and the Kodesh Baruch Hu has his reasons, has his ways why it's not the right time, not the right place. A person can sometimes feel a little dejected, you know, I really want this job, it's good paying, whatever, but a person has to have a emunah that Hashem knows what he's doing. Find this by Pinchas. And Pinchas at first was not a Kohen. As Rashi explains, that when the Kohuna was given out, it was given to Aaron and his sons, and the sons that were, you know, alive at the time, and the grandchildren that were alive, which was Pinchas, was the Kohuna was not given to. So only Aaron and his children, and the children that are going to be born after that. Since Pinchas was alive already, he wasn't given the Kohuna. So Pinchas could have had a tine, it's not fair, you know, why can't he become a Kohen, etc. So the Likutei Haaretz on the Orach Chaim says a gevaltig vort. He says that Pinchas, you know, didn't understand perhaps, but he trusted in the Kodesh Baruch Hu. And in the end, we see retroactively what was behind it. What was it? That had, he says, Pinchas been a Kohen, then he wouldn't have ended up killing Zimri. Why? Because killing Zimri would put him in a matzav of Tumas Mace. You know, he kills a guy in the Ohel and he's a Kohen, not supposed to be there. So Mistame wouldn't have killed Zimri because he didn't want to become Tame, being a Kohen. Ah, but now that he wasn't a Kohen, he had no problem killing Zimri. And what happened because of that? He got the Bris Kahuna anyways. And besides that, he got another Bris, Bris Yishalom. Where the Sforno, says, what's the Bris Yishalom? That it was Cherus from the Malach HaMavis. That's according to the opinion that Pinchas is Eliyahu Navi, is Chai V'Kayim. So he's a tremendous bracha of living forever, and all because if he wasn't made at a Kohen to begin with. So the person has to have trust that Hashem knows what he's doing. The pasuk Bris Kunas Olam Tachas Asher Kinei Lelokav, the Chasam Sofer says that you can, I'll piremez at least, that the Madrega, someone who is a mechanic, Kinas Hashem, who is a zealot for Hashem, is even greater than that of a Kohen Gadol. Where do we see that? It says you can read it like this, Bris Kunas Olam. But the Bris Kunas Olam is Tachas Asher Kinei LaTachas. Generally, the Pashup Shad is, it's against. You know, because of this, he got this. Tachas, because she was Kinei LaLokav, he became Bris Kunas Olam. But Tachas could also mean below. So there's a hint that the Bris Kunas Olam is below, is a Madrega below Tachas Asher Kinei LaLokav, because Kinei LaLokav has a higher Madrega. And what does it mean to be Mekane Hashem? So they say it's a person who's Mevatel, his Ratzon, completely to the Ratzon of Hashem. And it brings here a Maisa with Chaim Kluft, that he met a Yid once on a bus who looked like a Pashita Yid, but soon we'll see that he was Bechal not a Pashita Yid. He sits next to this guy on the bus, and this is a guy from Russia, Russian. So they're schmoozing about this, about that. And then he tells him the following story. He says that when he was in the Russian army, it came his first Yom Kippur, and he knew that he couldn't tell them, you know, it's Yom Kippur, I can't. but he didn't want to, he couldn't see himself being active in duty on Yom Kippur. So he was thinking of a way to get out of it. So what did he do? He somehow knocked one of his teeth really, really hard until he actually got loose. And then he went to the camp, to the base, to the doctor, whatever, dentist, and he says, you know, I have this tremendous pain in my tooth, you know. And this was it was on Ches Tishrei, 2 days before Yom Kippur. So he goes to the dentist, he checks, and he says, wow, your tooth is really loose, you know, something happened over here, and we have to take care of it. What are they going to do? Have to pull it out. So he told him, you know, the Russian army, like pulling out your tooth is not done in such a professional way. You know, it's without any anesthesia, nothing. Just, you know, take a pair of pliers and yank. And it reminds me of that joke. There's once a woman, and she calls the dentist and says, how much do you charge to pull a tooth, you know, adult tooth, whatever? So the dentist says, $200. She goes, $200? Oh, that's a fortune. I can't afford it. Says, is there anything you can do to, you know, bring the price down somewhat? She goes, bring the price down. $200. I go, no, but it's too expensive. Anything can't. He goes, listen, lady, if you want, I can do this without anesthesia. You know, I don't give any freezing. And that'll take down the price substantially. It'll be like $100. She goes, yeah, okay, fine, great. So when can I make an appointment for my husband? Okay, so what did they do? He goes to the dentist and they yank out his tooth. He says, you have no idea the pain. Okay, and of course he couldn't function for a while. And he says, as much pain I was in, you know, lying there, I was happy though that I was able to not have to work on Yom Kippur. And he went through that Yom Kippur. Anyway, so after he tells Rav Kluff the story, he then smiles, and Rav Kluff sees he's missing four teeth. So he says, what's pshat? He says, 4 years in the army. Every Yom Kippur, before Yom Kippur, he knocked it out. He brings here another mice, so it's a little bit more gruesome, but similar. He says there was a woman that they saw she was missing most of her fingers. And she told them the story behind that she was in during the Holocaust, she was in a forced labor camp, and she was working, and Shabbos came along, and she was, it was Erev Shabbos. She goes, I can't work on Shabbos, I'm going to work on Shabbos, I'm not going to work on Shabbos. She goes, well, how am I going to get out, I'm not going to, she cannot work on Shabbos. So what did she do? She cut off one of her fingers. And she went again to the doctor, whatever, and she said, you know, she made up a story that the door closed on her finger, whatever, made up some story. And, okay, they had to, you know, deal with her and this and that, so she obviously couldn't work on that Shabbos. And by time, you know, she went through the whole healing process, it took quite a while until she finally was able to, heal and go back to work. So that was fine until when she went back to work, next Shabbos came along. So what did she do? Cut off another finger. And so on and so forth until she dragged out most of her fingers was missing. And by that, she dragged out there until the end of the war. And she was able to not to work on Shabbos, giving her fingers for it. Not pasha to you. It's an amazing, amazing board here. It's not really connected to the parsha, but it's fantastic. He brings on the pasuk v'tikrav benos slavchad. So he brings here the chashivus of a bas Yisrael. That's a connection to the parsha, but it's based on the parsha in Shmuel Aleph Perek Yud Zayin. With David HaMelech. We're all familiar with the famous story that David HaMelech throws a rock at Goliath and knocks him down. And the pasuk says that then David went and cut off his head. Cut off Goliath's head. So the pasuk reads, Vayaretz David v'yamod el ha-plishti. So David ran to the plishti, to Goliath. V'yikach harbo v'yishlefa misara. So then he went and he took Goliath's sword and took it out of the sheath, right? And v'yumosehu v'yichras bas rasho. And he was already killed him, and he took out now the sword and he cut off his head. V'yiru ha-plishtim kimeis giburam v'yanusu. And then the plishtim saw that their gibor had died, and they ran away. And that was the end of it. So he brings here an interesting question. Why does the pasuk have to tell us that David took out the sword from the sheath? Why is that so important? To say he took Goliath's sword and killed him. Why do you have to go through this whole thing? He took the sword out of the sheath. What's the point? It says amazing things. Based on Chazal, it's from a Kli Yakar. It says, based on the Chazal, it says the following. That David HaMelech wanted to take the sword out of the sheath in order to cut off Goliath's head, but he couldn't do it. He was trying and trying and trying, and he just couldn't get it out. So what did he do? He asked the shield bearer of Goliath. You know, Goliath's going to carry his shield around. And it says in the pasuk, he's called the Ish Nose Hatzina. So he went up to him and he said, can you do me a favor? even though it was on Goliath's side, but he said, can you do me a favor? He said, can you get his sword out? I need to cut his head off. Can you get his sword out of here? I can't get it out. So the guy says to David, interesting, he says, I'll make a deal with you. He says, if I convert, I want to convert to Judaism. I'll convert to Judaism, and you give me a Bas Yisrael to marry after I convert. Okay, if you do that, then I'll take that sword out for you. So David Melech agreed. and he was able to, and then he took out the sword for him, and he cut off his head. Agav, who was this shield bearer that ended up converting, and who was it? It was Uriah Hiti. It was with Bathsheba's husband, original husband. Right? That was the. So what happened? A Kodesh Baruch Hu came to David and said, and was angry at him, and said that since he said, "What are you doing, making business deals with Benot Yisrael? Yeah, I'll give you a, you know, give me the sword. I'll give you a Bas Yisrael. Yeah, what are you doing, making deals like that with a Bas Yisrael?" He said, "Because of that, you're going to be punished. Shalcha ton nosein la. You're going to give your wife to him." Meaning, Bathsheba comes out, was supposed to be David from the beginning with, not Uriah. But because he made this deal, so he lost Bathsheba first to Uriah, and only later got her after what happened. So that's the Maisa. But he asks, he says, Lechura, but what did David do so wrong? I mean, he wasn't playing games. He wanted to cut off Goliath's head, as the Pasuk says, because he wanted to show the Plishtim, and that would scare them, and they ran away, which is exactly what happened. So it's Pikuach Nefesh. So he did deals with Benot Yisrael. He wasn't giving a Bas Yisrael to a goy. He was converting. The guy converted, gave a Bas Yisrael to a goy, to save the day and chase away the Plishtim and Pikuach Nefesh. What was so terrible? Says a Gevaltig Vor. He says, fine, but let's say Uriah would have said to David, "I'll take out the sword if you give me the king's daughter." Then what? Would David have been so quick to give the king's daughter over? As much as Pikuach Nefesh, he would have thought twice. But he didn't think twice. Why? Well, it's not the king's daughter. So that was his pagam. He said he didn't realize that every Bas Yisrael is the king's daughter. He didn't realize the chashivas of Bas Yisrael. It was the king's daughter. I wouldn't give her up so quick. But it's not a Jewish girl. What's the difference? That was Hashem's time. Every Jewish girl is the king's daughter. And you gave her up too easily. As a result, he was punished. Okay. It's a rather famous story. It brings on the pasuk, Banim lo hayu lo. With the Rav Chaim Shmulevitz, that's all, Rashiv Amir, said that he used to frequent the Kever Rachel to daven for the Tzaras of Klal Yisrael. And once, when Rav Chaim was davening at the Kever, he happened to be near the Mechitz of the lady side. And he hears, coming from the lady section, a woman davening. And she was crying bitterly, and he heard her say, she said, "Rachel, Rachel, Rachel Imenu," she says, you're barren, you didn't have any children just like me. So you can feel for me, you can feel how it is not having any children. So do me a favor, you know what my tzaras is, you had the same tzaras, so please, can you please be a melech yosher for me and so that I should have a child. So Rav Chaim was so taken aback by this tefillah, you know, from the lev and the way, you know, her approach, you know, compared to Rachel, she didn't have children. So afterwards he saw this woman and he said, "You know, I was really impressed by your tefillah, and I'm sure it was miskabel in Shemaim. Such a tefillah, I have no doubt, and I'm sure you're going to have a child this year." And sure enough, she had a boy, and Rav Chaim was the Sunday that year for a child. Also in the pasuk about Benos Safchad, came Benos Safchad's Dovros, Rashi says, Yafet Tavu, they had a good taina, and Rashi says, Ashrei Adam Shekadosh Baruch Hu Modil Advarav. Happy is the man that Hashem agrees to what they do. Brings here a story also about a Bas Yisrael, this girl, that she was having a hard time finding a shidduch. And see why that's significant a little bit later in the story. And one day she goes to a store and she wants to buy a scarf. So she finds one. She found one she likes. She goes to the mocher, you know, sales, the store owner, whatever, and says, "I'd like to buy the scarf, but I'd like to know, does it have a chatnez? Is it check for chatnez, whatever?" So he got a little angry and he says, "What do you mean chatnez? What do you think? I sell things that don't have chatnez? Of course it's okay. Well, I wouldn't sell them." So she still wasn't so sure about it, and she says, "What happens if it has chutneys?" So he said, "Listen," he said, "if it has chutneys, besides the fact that I'll, you know, give you your money back, I'll give you a credit. You can buy other things in the store. You know, if it has chutneys, don't worry about it. No chutneys." So she said, "Can I have that in writing, please?" So he says, yeah, no problem, right? So here, give us fine. So she pays for the scarf, and where does she go from there? To the Chatney's laboratory. So she gives it in, and they said, not only does it have Chatney's, it's Kulo Chatney's. It's one shtick Chatney's, is all the scarf. Anyway, she was furious. You know, it's not the money, you know, okay, kapar on the money, but the you know, she couldn't stand, you know, being taken for a ride. You know, how the guy was like a rami, you know, when it really had Chatney's, and I really bought. So of course she wanted to go straight to that store, you know, really give it to him and take advantage of her credit that she has. Before she told her father, I'm going to be a big Talmud Chacham, and her father said, you know, I'm not sure whether you can give it back. So she goes, what do you mean? It's full of shatnez. He says, understand. He says, but you're going to give it back. What's going to happen? He's going to give it to somebody else. And that's not going to check it like you. And you're going to machshel somebody and have it in shatnez. So he said, I don't think you can give it back. So she said, okay, whatever. She wasn't so happy with that, but she didn't. But then, after a while, she got to thinking, again, it was bothering her, this guy, and really, you know, what, he's going to take advantage of me. So she went to another Rav, and asked a Rav about a thing, and he tined it that she could give it back. Okay, so now it was Teku, you know, her father, Talmud Chacham, says he can. This other Rav says yes. So they decided they're going to take the Shara to Rav Eliyashiv. As that's all, and whatever he says, that's what they're going to do. So they asked Rav Eliyashiv, and he said she should not give it back. And like the father says, you shouldn't give it back. Okay, so her next step was just to take the scarf and burn it, you know. But she decided, she says, you know, I might as well do something positive, do something positive with this experience. So she went to the seminar in Bnei Brak, Rav Kahana's seminar, and she told him the whole story, and she suggested, you know, maybe you should go around together to the different classes of girls and show them the scarf and show them how it's kulo shatnez, and show them how you have to, you know, be careful and not trust some salesman that happens to say that it's okay, and you know, they'll see it visual aid. So that's what they did. They went from class to class and showed the scarf, the shot, and whatever, and the girls got a very good lesson out of it. So what happens? So just that night, after she finished this lesson in the school, the family gets a call about a shidduch for her, and a week later she was engaged. So Hashem paid her back. Interesting, Shaila. He brings on the pasuk of Lotia Adas Hashem Kitzon Asher Ein Lehem Roeh. Shouldn't be like a flock that doesn't have a shepherd. So he brings here a Maisa with a certain Rav that somebody asked him to be a Mesader Kedushin at their Chasana. But he knew the people were not so frum, and so he asked them, "Is there going to be a mechitza at the wedding?" So they said, "Yes, don't worry, Rabbi. There's going to be a mechitza. Whatever, you can trust us." Okay. So he was a little bit nervous, but he went, and he agreed, you know, and he went. And sure enough, he got there. The mechitzas were up, everything fine. It was wonderful. He was really happy to see that. So he performed the ceremony. Fine. The marriage was done, and so then he figured, okay, I'll sit in a few minutes, you know, in the hall, you know, and then afterwards I'll make my way out. So he's sitting there, and fine, and all of a sudden some guy comes up to him and says, "Psst, Rabbi, come over here a second." He says, "I just want to let you know something, you know, you think very nice, Mechitza, but you should realize, as soon as you walk out of this ulam, the mechitzas are going down and the party's starting, okay? It's just an indifference for you, you know, you're the rabbi and this, they're not going to do it while you're here, you know, they feel, you know, coveted, they have a little decency, coveted Torah, but as soon as you leave, I'm telling you, I know, it's goodbye mechitzas." Anyway, so the rabbi had a shaila, right? Should he leave? Now, he said, what was the shaila? Fine, he has no problem staying until the morning. I mean, to save people from, you know, chas v'shalom, you know, mixed dancing and things like that, no problem. However, he had a shir kavua that he had to give. He gives every night or whatever a shir, and it's not good, you know, to miss a shir. You know, shir is given kindly, not to cancel, not a good thing. It, you know, breaks the consistency of the shir. So now he didn't know what to do, right? Should he stay and prevent the mechitza from going down, or should he say, okay, what's going to be, what's going to be, I got to get my shear? That was a shaila. So there's an interesting answer suggested by a certain Talmud Chacham Echad, he says here, that he wanted to bring an answer from the following diuk in a couple of Gemara. The Gemara says in Chulin about Abaye was a Kohen, and it said that he used to not do Birkas Kohanim because his yeshiva bachim were waiting for him to give a shiur. For some reason, the shiur came out at the same time when he would have to do Birkas Kohanim, and bevater in the midst of Birkas Kohanim just to make sure that he gives the shiur. Okay, so what do we see from that Gemara? That Rabbi was very, very makpid on making sure he gave the shiur and even missed Birkas Kohanim for it. Yet we see another Gemara in the end of Sukkah that says that once Abaye saw this man, this woman, they were not married, whatever, and they were wandering off into this field. And he was worried what they're going to do there. So to prevent them from doing an Isser, he walked behind them. And they said, somebody was behind them, so they didn't do anything. And he walked until they went through the whole field, the other side, whatever, until they got out into the city, and that was the end of that. So on the Medayik, he said, what do we see? The same Abaye, who was so makpid on his, he would miss Birkas Kohanim and make sure not to miss the Shia to be with his Bachram. And here, when he saw a couple who was going to do an Isser, he, no matter how much time it took, he followed them along right through to the end. So mainly we see from here that this Rav, it's important to give the shear, but here it's talking about not an Isser of what one or two people are going to do, it's an Isser that a bunch of people are going to be doing, and therefore it's better to stay around and prevent all these people from doing an Isser than to give the shear this once. Yeah, similarly brings this Maisid, it was a Yid, he was taking the bus from Yerushalayim in Yerushalayim to go to Bnei Brak, but the bus was going to Petach Tikva, the final destination. So along the way, people getting off, and it happened to be the last bus or whatever, it was very late, and by the time it came for him to get off in Bnei Brak, the only people left in the bus was just him, the driver, and the woman. And he didn't know what to do, because if he gets off, then he's creating a matzav of yichud with the woman and the bus driver. So he wasn't sure what to do, but he wanted to get off because that was where the stop was, Bnei Brak. So the psak that he was given, maybe after the fact, was that in Chanam you shouldn't get off the bus. He should go to the end, go to Petach Tekvah, whenever the woman would get off, and make his way back in order to save the person from doing it. Okay. Brings here a story. He's on the pasuk Isha Sheruachbo. Says there was this bacher who was, as we'll see, not a very good person, putting it mildly. And he worked it out that he was a shidduch for himself to marry the daughter of a very, very wealthy man. Fine. So. Everything goes through, and they get the shidduch, and they get married. And soon after the chasana, the chal aside saw that the type of guy he really was, and he was he said he doesn't want to be married anymore. He wants to give a get to his new wife. And once they saw who they were dealing with, they said, no problem, give a get. We don't want you anyways. However, he said, not so fast. He said, knowing who he's dealing with, they're very wealthy. He says, I'll only give your daughter a get if you give me $50,000. So they wanted to get rid of this guy. So said, at any price. So they gave him $50,000, and that was and he gave her a get. And what did he do? He went in, he ran around. He found another fish. He got somebody else, another daughter of another wealthy man, and ended up marrying her, and he did the same shtick. After the marriage, he said, I want to divorce her, and how much? $50,000, and I'll divorce her. Anyway, so, as they again wanted to get rid of him, they paid him $50,000. He didn't give up. It's only 100,000, So he took it a step further. He wanted to find another third person. Ad kere kach. So what happened? Somebody got word, what this guy was doing, and they went to Moshe Feinstein and told him, said that this guy is a rotten, good for nothing. What he's doing, he's extorting money from these people. So Rav Moshe, you know, heard, and he says, okay, and he said, I'll do my utmost, you know, to stop this guy. And sure enough, he did what he had to do, and he was able to stop this guy from doing this again and not marrying a third person. What happened? Shortly after that, all of a sudden, the Bachur and Rav Moshe's yeshiva see this guy, this Bachur, working in the yeshiva, in the kitchen, whatever. So they go up to Rav Moshe and go, what's going on? Like, this guy, why would you hire, of all people, the guy you hire to work for the yeshiva? So Rav Moshe says, no, Dafka. He says, why? He says, well, first of all, he says, as a side point, that we see from the Torah that you have to support Ganavim also. Even a Ganav you have to support if he's Jewish. Where do we see that? Eved Ivri. Well, who's an Eved Ivri? Guy stole, couldn't pay back. That's what you do. You have to, you sell whatever, and then he works, and you're supporting him. Right? So we see from there that Torah asks us to support Ganavim also. He says, and he said, why me? Anybody could say, why Dafka me? He says, Dafka me. He says, why? He says, because I took away his parnasa. I prevented him from marrying a third thing. I took away his quote-unquote parnasa. So I figured, look, I took his breath. Least I can do is I should be the one to help him and give him support. Okay. So, Maisa here. He's on the Pasuk Yom Trua. Dealing with Rosh Hashanah. So there was a fellow, this happened in Tavshin Ayin Aleph 2 years ago. This fellow went to, was traveling in business to America, and he went to Miami. He had to go and visit to Miami. And when he got there, he knew that there was, he had a cousin who he had seen years ago, but he hadn't been in too much kesher with him, connection, because the guy wasn't religious at all, and so he didn't have too much in common with him. So he's now that he came to Miami, he was thinking, should I be in touch with him? Not. So I said, I'll call him. So he called up his cousin, and he says, I'm here in Miami. He says, oh yeah, can you come over, please? You know, I'd love to have you over. He goes, okay, fine. So he says, I made my way to his house, and as soon as I get closer to the house, I see something looks different over here. What I see on his door, a mezuzah. He never had a mezuzah. There was totally, you know, no connection to Yiddish guy. And now he sees a mezuzah on his door. And then he walks in. He sees a Shabbos candlesticks, a siddur, a chumash, a this, that, whatever. And he was, like, shocked. So his cousins saw this and said, okay, I know what, you know, I can understand why you're shocked. Let me tell you what happened. So what happened? Says, you know, I don't know if ever in my life, except for maybe in bar mitzvah, ever stepped into a shul before, you know. I have no connection to it. And what happened, I was sitting on my porch, which is a house by the beach, you know. And I'm sitting on my porch, you know, looking over at the ocean. And near there's a shul. And it happened to be Rosh Hashanah. And I see these group of, all of a sudden the people started filing out of the shul, and they start walking towards the ocean. And I was very curious, that's strange, why are all these people coming out of the shul and going towards the ocean? I didn't realize it was Tashlich, you know. So I, all of a sudden inside me something pushed me to say, go over there, see what's doing, you know, go over there. So I don't know what got into me, but I just jumped up and I went there, I went to the... And I see all these people with Sidurim, and they're like davening, saying certain things, whatever. And so then I realize, you know, they told me that, you know, they're trying to, they're saying Tashli, to get rid of their sins, etc. So they handed me a Siddur, and they said, here, why don't you say it also? I said, okay. So I started saying Tashli. And it was, I felt really good. I felt very moved. You know, I hadn't davened in so long, ever, whatever. And you know, about my sins, it made an impression on me. Anyways, all of a sudden, I get a tap on my back. I turn and I see a yid with a very distinguished looking, very big, long white beard and a long coat and that. And he says to me, tell me, the shofar, did you hear today? You listen to the shofar today? So I said, no. So he takes out of his pocket a shofar, a little shofar, and he right there on the spot, he blows a shofar for me. Well, that would really, like, wow, that blew me away, you know, the shofar, that. So I thanked him, and he said, you know, it's nice meeting you. My name is Moshe Katz. And he shook his hand, and they parted. That was it. Anyways, after the whole incident, he said, I was so, you know, uplifted. I went home, and I just, you know, had to tell somebody, you know. So I my wife was there, and I said, oh, you got to hear what happened to me just now. You know, you're not going to believe it. So he said, you know, I saw these people. I went, and I was saying, Tashlich. And then this guy knocked me on the back, and he says, you want to hear the shofar? And he blows the shofar for me, whatever. And she says, yeah. He said, well, who is this guy? So she says, I don't know. And he told me his name was Moshe Katz. And all of a sudden, this woman, his wife, turns white and she faints. So he runs up to her, you know, brings her back to. And she says, Moshe Katz? Says, yeah. He says, can you tell me how he looked? She says, yeah, I'll tell you exactly how he looked. You know, his long white beard, this and that, whatever. She faints again. So he gets her, you know, pour some water on her, and gets her back up, and says, what's going on? So she said, you're not going to believe this, but that was my father. He says, your father? What are you talking about? So what happened? She said, her father died in the Holocaust, and he used to be a Baal Tokeya in Rosh Hashanah. He used to, in the shtibel, used to blow a shofar on Rosh Hashanah in the shul, and he was killed during the Holocaust. And his name was Moshe Katz. Now, after this, his daughter, you know, came to afterwards America, whatever, and she changed her name in the meantime. And of course, her husband never met his father-in-law because he died in the Holocaust, so he never met him. And he never heard that her name was originally Katz, even because she had changed it. And so Moshe Katz didn't mean anything. But you know the way he Baal Tokeya and exactly how he described him, he says, must have been my father came to you, and you know, from the next world. Interesting, they asked Rav Chaim Kanievsky what he makes of the story, and he said that there are things like that. It happens. It can happen. It's not unheard of. And he brought some Urias and the Gemara, whatever. So Rav Zilberstein says that, what do we see from here, though? Because he asks, he says, why Dafka now? I mean, this guy, he's not like he just married. He's been married a number of years. He hasn't been from for so, you know, ever. And why now he came from the next world to blow the shofar from? Like, why now? So he says, Tanya is very simple. He says, he took the first steps. Right? Till then, he didn't do any. Now he walked, he went to the thing. What are they doing? He went to be with them to do Seitasha. He took the first steps. Piskuli petach shel chudo shel machad, and then Hashem opens the piskul shel ulam. So that's what happened. So to Hashem, we should open up ourselves the Pesach of machad, and Hashem should open for us the piskul shel ulam, and bring us Mashiach, Tzidkei, and Rebim, here we remain.